Welcome into the Pick Aside podcast, a weekend recap edition with a lot to do. Shane Orling and Tyler Aki with you as always, and as always available on YouTube, youtube.com/@PickAsideESPN. Tyler, how you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good after this football weekend. It was a good one. We were talking a little bit on Friday when we were previewing all of the games in the NFL, saying it's going to be kind of a dog shit weekend. There were some good games. It maybe wasn't the greatest of matchups, but there were good games on Sunday, pretty much start to finish.
Yep. Record-wise, I got my ass kicked.
Did you?
I cleared on the Ohio State quad bomb.
There you go.
And then I gave it away on the quad bomb teaser, Cleveland and San Francisco.
Where did we go wrong?
I had Cleveland plus 10.5. And how I don't cover 10.5 points in a game where San Francisco's scoring drives were no longer than 20 fucking yards.
Yeah.
Is insane. Shout out Shadur Sanders. So record wise, I got my ass kicked, but it's kind of fine because I was dead on Ohio State and I'm cool with it. I think there's a ton of, there's less on field to react to in college and more off field to react to.
Yep.
Because the on field stuff is, we got it right with Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what that actually does to the playoff picture? A&M is in. I actually think A&M gets a better pull out of this than Bama. Bama may have preferred that A&M beat Texas and just knock them out of the SEC title entirely, because now they're in the trick bag where they beat Auburn, and you probably have to beat Georgia if you want to get in.
I have a hard time feeling that an SEC runner-up in a year where we've said nothing but glowing things about the SEC is going to miss the playoff.
Yeah, it's the thing that gets sticky is there are only so many bids.
Mm-hmm.
And Ole Miss is in front of you, and A&M is in front of you. So you're going to be the runner-up, but you're also ranked by two teams in conference who lost fewer games than you did.
Yeah.
So it's like, just because the Florida State loss kills them, and then losing to Oklahoma, the consequence of it. If BYU beats Texas Tech, and it's why I'd offer you this, if I'm Texas Tech, I'm throwing the Big 12 title.
Why would you do that?
Because I know I'm in.
And if I let you know that you're in?
Yeah, dude, Texas Tech's in. If I let BYU steal a bid, then I knock out Notre Dame or Bama and I just don't have to worry about them.
Okay, I don't know if they're necessarily in with a loss.
I think they're in.
Because, okay, if you look at the 1 through 12, it's really, for a team like Texas Tech, you're really looking at 1 through 10. Because 11 is going to go to a group of 5 / ACC, and then the 12 spot is going to go to the other. So I don't know if you're necessarily in.
I think they're in, and we'll find out tomorrow when the rankings come out.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're still, like, if they're comfortably ahead of Bama, I think they can afford to lose to BYU and still be in. Because they'll have BYU.
BYU takes a spot, though, but yeah. BYU won the bigger game.
But that's where BYU steals a bid. This is my whole theory, is Texas Tech's in, so just throw this game and then let BYU steal a bid and leave Notre Dame at home so you don't have to deal with them. Let BYU steal Notre Dame's spot.
I'll tell you what, I don't think 11-2 Texas Tech is getting in over 10-2 Notre Dame.
I would think that's ridiculous. They're punished for making a conference title. We didn't see that last year with SMU.
I think it's a little different with Notre Dame, who didn't play in a conference title.
Like, but it was SMU got in at the expense of Alabama.
I know.
That's where I think getting into this game, earning it and being the higher-ranked team and being the favorite, you've earned your way to the playoff.
Okay. We'll find out. We'll find out.
You putting me in this world where Texas Tech loses the Big 12 title and gets eliminated?
Now,
I would crash out.
One of the hang-ups in all of it is what happens now with Ole Miss.
So I think, because it depends.
That's where we start.
I think it depends on if players leave. If you end up with a portal exodus now, then I hate it so much for Ole Miss fans, because they deserve it. They've never had a season this good in their history. Mm-hmm. This is what they've been waiting on for 60 years. But if there's a portal exodus, I think you just knock them out. Right?
I mean, the precedent set the has precedent. Been set. With what happened with Florida State, was this 2-3 years ago now? And Jordan Travis gets injured late in the season. You still go out and you win the ACC title, but you know you're going to be without your quarterback in that game. And ultimately, the committee leaves out an undefeated Florida State for was it I think it was Alabama that got in that day. Yep. So the precedent's been set. Now, that was a 4-team playoff, not a 12-team playoff. So I don't know if that changes any of the calculus here. Again, you bumped Florida State back one spot from 4 to 5. This would be bumping back Ole Miss from 6 or wherever they end up in the playoff rankings tomorrow night to like 11 or 12. But 11 and 12 is pushing you out of the playoff because of the auto qualifiers.
Well, I'm leaving in the caveat that it has to be a portal exodus. It can't just be that you're without your coach. You need to also be without your quarterback, your top
back.
But
it's not just your head coach. It's pretty much your entire offensive staff.
Yeah, I mean, it is a problem. And I don't know what the committee's going to do with them. I do think there's a chance Ole Miss gets left home. And honestly, I just come back to Lane Kiff is a fucking asshole.
That's what this is, yeah.
The way he went about this was ridiculous. If you wanted to be at LSU, go be at fucking LSU. Don't cock-tease all the Ole Miss fans and then leave them holding this horrible bag where they might just get left out of the playoffs. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. No, it's Lane Kiffin showed you who he was. When someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Yep.
And he has told them not once, not twice, not three, like 4 or 5 times there have been major instances of Lane showing the scumbag that he is. And this is now that coming to the forefront in maybe the biggest episode of it all,
yep.
Right? Because I don't think he can top this.
No, and it's the way he went about it. Like, it's not, Lane is more than welcome to take the LSU job. He has every right to leave Ole Miss and take the LSU job. Nobody is saying that he was wrong to do that. But the way he did it, it never had to be this way. If you want to go coach someplace else, go. But this nonsense where you're going to beg with the AD, oh, please let me coach the team through the playoff. What are you fucking on crack? They're going to let the head coach of LSU walk into the Ole Miss locker room and coach them through the playoff? You got to be out of your fucking mind.
I will say this, though. I think this was a case of Ole Miss cutting off their nose despite their face, not letting him coach this.
I think it's the right thing to do.
No, I'm on the opposite side of this, because what if you now get left out of the playoff because there is a portal exodus? You're going to give up on the best season in your program's history because of this?
I would.
Potentially? You would?
Yeah.
You would fold like that?
Yes. I'm
you
not going
to
let...
give up on a chance to win a national title? Because if you win a national title this year, frankly, you don't really care if Lane leaves.
But I'm also... I'm not Tulane. I'm not South Florida. I'm not like some
but you're not some Alabama either.
Team. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm not some poverty conference team that I understand group of five jobs mm-hmm. are coming of it. And it's not like he's leaving. Maybe if he were leaving to take the Ohio State job, I might be more palatable and like, okay, we can let this run out. You're going to an in-conference rival. Fuck off. You want to be there so bad? Go be there. Don't be here. I don't need you here. Like, I'm just... I'm thinking about, like, okay, let's do this. Michigan State is in a world where Pat Fitzgerald has us in a 12-team playoff, mm-hmm. but Ryan Day has been fired, and now Ohio State's calling. And Pat Fitzgerald takes the Ohio State job, and we're 11-1, and we just clinched a playoff spot. And Pat Fitzgerald comes out and goes, I'm coaching at Ohio State next year. Get the fuck out of my locker room. I don't ever want the coach of Ohio State coaching my team. But that's nonsense.
That's different, because that you would not be looking at the greatest season in Michigan State history.
I get that.
This is literally the greatest season in Ole Miss history.
Right, but that's where you have built the greatest period of football in the history of this program. You built it.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided that it wasn't good enough for you. And that the grass is going to be greener somewhere else. How could the grass possibly be greener? You have built a monolith of a program at Ole Miss, at a place everybody said it couldn't happen, and you built Come to the Sip, and you made us a bigger brand, you did all of these things for us, and then you told us, you're not that pretty, I'm going to go someplace else. Well, then you know what? Fuck off. I can't have you in my locker room.
I just don't think it's worth missing out on a potential national title because of this. I don't. I would have let him coach the playoff. You could... A, disqualify yourself from the playoff as a result of this, and B, at least give yourself a chance. Like, you could be looking at an Ole Miss team that could be hosting a first-round playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
In all likelihood, hosting a first-round playoff game if Lane stays. Now, with Lane not there, there's question if you're even going to make the playoff. Simply by a decision that is being made by the head coach. Listen, you're going to coach LSU, you're going to coach LSU. I don't think there's any debate of prestige here. LSU is clearly the most prestigious.
Yeah, nobody's arguing.
I think Ole Miss is kind of propping themselves up a little bit of who they are.
Yeah, but they should do that. That's why I used Michigan State as an example and pinned them against Ohio State, because I know I'm never going to be that job. But I do think more highly of myself than people think of me, and I think Ole Miss fans should also feel that way. That this is it's the Grove. It is a great environment. It is the SEC. We are in the South. You have built something here. And if you're telling me, like the marriage analogy everybody's using.
Yeah.
If I go shack up with some woman and then I come home and I tell my wife, hey, I met this beautiful girl and everything about her is better than you, and I'm going to get married to her. But we have a lease that goes through the end of the month, so I'm going to stay in the house until then. She would tell me to get the fuck out.
See, this is where I think it's such a broken analogy, because there is still something you can accomplish with Ole Miss where the fan base would forgive you. If you won a national title, I think they'd be like, all right, that's
they had beat writers calling him a bitch before he even left.
I know.
I don't know that they'd forgive him anyway.
I don't think if you win it, winning cures all. Winning cures everything. If he went and won a national title with them and that was his parting gift on the way out, I think it'd be a little bit more palatable for Ole Miss fans. Because those banners fly forever.
I think it's different because I don't think they would ever even accept him coaching. I think if he did coach, you would create a scenario where they'd play a home playoff game and be booed.
I don't know.
They hate him, man.
I know they hate him. I'm not here to tell you. Like, whenever Ole Miss or whenever LSU comes to Ole Miss, I think it's what 2028. I want to say is when it's on the calendar. Whenever that game happens, it will be probably one of the five most hostile environments in sports history. It will be. But I think that if he had walked out and won a national title, I think Ole Miss fans would be able to stomach it a little bit more.
We're going to have to agree to disagree, because I could never. I put myself in the shoes of the program. I could never allow the head coach of LSU to be the head coach at Ole Miss. I can't let him in my locker room. I can't let him wear the Ole Miss shirt and be on the sideline and wear the headset. I can't put him in the colors. I can't even let him in the building. Just, you wanted to be there? Then go be there. You don't get to have your cake and eat it too. You know what I mean? We offered you the same amount of money. We offered you the same NIL benefits. You said you want to be at LSU. And I get it, because LSU, you have a higher recruiting ceiling. You have a higher recruiting floor. You don't need to rely so much on the portal. Like, every quarterback that Lane has taken, Jackson Dart from USC or Trinidad Chambliss from Ferris State, it's always a transfer kid. He's never going to be able to build a base with recruiting at Ole Miss. I get it. You can do it at LSU. But if you want to be there so bad, then you don't get to be here. We can't do both. It's a unique situation that he created. And I don't think, like, neither side is wrong. Lane wants to be at LSU, go be at LSU. But if you wanted to coach Ole Miss through the playoff, then sign the contract that they offered you. That was your choice. And he made his choice. Now it's, well, if it isn't the consequences of my own act.
No, listen, I think it's pathetic that he's playing victim through it all, too.
Well, that's the problem. That,
I wanted to coach, but they wouldn't let me, despite the fact that players wanted me to coach. Like,
the ridiculous letter that he posted on social media.
It was pathetic. Don't get me wrong. Everything that Lane is doing and the process in which he is doing it is pathetic. But if I'm Lane Kiffin and I want to go to LSU, I can treat this like everything else. And listen, maybe I'll take my lumps for 1 year. Lane's the type of coach with his ability to recruit in the transfer portal. You can flip this over in 1 year. There is that late transfer window, too.
I have to tell you, I'm also surprised LSU would have been willing to let him coach Ole Miss through the playoff. Because wouldn't you also think...
But guess what? Lane is the one that held all the power in this.
Yeah, of course.
He was the big name on everyone's board of this is who we want to hire.
Which is insane.
And everyone would have had to play Lane's game if they wanted. If Lane Kiffin wanted to be at LSU and also wanted to coach Ole Miss through the end and see it through to the end of the playoff, he could have said, I'm coaching Ole Miss right now, and I'm going to make a decision on my future at the end of the season. He could have said that. And I think Ole Miss fans would have been fine with it.
Yeah, the problem would have been LSU wouldn't have waited for him, probably.
Well, then, you know what? He gives the middle finger to LSU, because I get to still go up against you, and if you don't want me now, then all right, fine. You can wait this thing out, and I'll come work for you.
But you
have to wait this out.
The best point is that neither Ole Miss or Lane are doing anything wrong. The reason I have a sour taste, and a lot of people have a sour taste, is because Lane Kiffin is begging for you to feel bad for him.
No sympathy.
This morning I made the incredibly difficult decision of deciding to coach LSU. Oh, really? Was it that difficult? You signed a $13 million a year check. What, are you out of your mind? This morning I made the difficult decision to become a billionaire. Like, fuck off. Just don't tell me how tough this was for you.
I don't even think that's the part that bothers me as much. Like, don't get me wrong. It is a tough decision.
Yeah, I get it. And like I am sure that it is difficult for Lane to make the decision. But the framing of it, where suddenly I'm making myself into a victim. Like, I get it. It's tough for him to do it. But it's also, you did this.
Yeah, no. To me, it's the victimization of, they still want me, like everyone in that locker room still wants me, but the higher powers at the university are the ones making the decision and punishing the kids. I'm not the one punishing the kids. It's the university punishing the kids. That ain't true, brother.
The other problem is the whole thing reeks of a guy who made his decision months ago, right? Like, it feels like he's known he was doing this basically since Brian Kelly got clipped.
Mm-hmm.
Lane has known he's going to LSU, but he told nobody. And now at the end, after dragging this out and putting Ole Miss through hell, he's like, oh, also, let me do this for you. And they're like, dude, like, I do believe if Brian Kelly gets clipped and then the back channeling starts immediately and Lane then goes, I'm going to go to LSU, guys. I do wonder if, like, they would have let him finish the season. But I think the fact that he dragged it out as much as he did and he turned it into a LeBron decision type of thing. And then he's moving
setting
player
deadlines,
meetings.
Yeah.
And then he's not even going to be at the meeting with the players when he goes to LSU. And I'm like, yeah, at some point, if I'm Ole Miss, just fuck off.
Well, and then the other part too, the ultimatum he's given the assistants. You're on the plane to Baton Rouge with me or you're not on the staff.
It's insane.
It's such a slimy, dirty thing. And listen, everyone wants to talk about how the transfer portal and how NIL has murkied what college sports are. It's always been the coaches.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been the coaches because they've been able to do this and get away with this since the dawn of the start of college sports. Yep. And it's always been the, all right, how can I move up along the social ladder here? And this is just another example.
And honestly, what just needs to happen, maybe it involves starting the season a week later, or they have to change the calendar.
Well, you have to align with the academic calendar. And if that's what you have to do, then you probably have to move the season up.
Then you're going to start in temperatures that are too hot, but I almost don't care because it's not like they care about player safety. But yeah, you'd have to put the national title game basically on Christmas weekend. Or just
New Year's Day. Yeah.
Or find a way to just say, you know what, this is different than the academics. Just admit what we all know and split this off from the academics and just say, if you want to hire my coach, you can't talk to them until the season's over. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, the calendar's absurd. It's totally fucked up. This shouldn't happen.
Right.
Like, I made the analogy last week. If I'm the Cleveland Browns, I can't go talk to Mike Vrabel right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. The thing that's different, though, in the NFL is all 32 jobs are equal, pretty much. Like, sure.
Yeah.
But for the most part, all 32 jobs are within an eyelash of each other. Nothing that's necessarily worth leaving for, per se. But in the NFL, like, you're just lucky to have one of the 32.
Sure.
In college, there is a tier system.
It's levels to it. Yeah.
So
the other college thing we got to talk about is the potential for a zero-bid ACC.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, in my world, and I know this isn't Snorling's world, but if it were, the ACC would already be eliminated. It's pathetic to me that the highest-ranked team, Miami, 12th seed in the AP, will wait and see what they are in the CFP poll. You couldn't qualify for the title game in your own conference, and a five-loss team qualified, we're done. The whole conference is out. If the highest-ranked team couldn't qualify for the title in a conference where a five-loss team got in, don't put the conference in the playoffs. We don't need to see it. I'd already zero-bid it. But I know that what it's going to take is Duke beating Virginia. And if Duke does beat Virginia, one last ride with our Blue Devils, who have failed us every fucking step of the way this year. If Duke beats Virginia, we get JMU and Tulane in the playoff, or JMU in North Texas.
You know, don't you think, to put my conspiracy cap on here, Jim Phillips has phoned this one in. Virginia is winning the football game. Every call is going to go Virginia's way, because if Virginia wins, Virginia's in the playoff. Like, they have 100%. Resumes that are better than North Texas, Tulane, JMU, well, all the likes.
And I don't know if you noticed, but the CFP did something I thought was really interesting. James Madison for a few weeks now has been ranked in the AP.
But they haven't been, right? In the
CFP hasn't ranked them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incredibly intentional to fuck the group of five. To just, like, even if Duke wins the ACC, I wonder if the committee has the bold-faced balls to just go and say Duke's ranked and JMU isn't.
Well, it's not just that, but it's North Texas, too. Like, all of them are in this kind of wave right here.
I think it's incredibly deliberate. Like, there's no way that the coaches' poll and the AP poll are both ranking these teams, and the CFP is like, no. Mm-hmm. I think it's very intentional. Yeah. They've done a couple things that I think tip their hand. One is putting Notre Dame at 9.
Mm-hmm.
I think tips the CFP's hand to, we're getting Notre Dame in. Like, barring absolute madness where BYU beats Texas Tech and we're forced because of AQs to do things, ND's getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Because at 9, there's exactly one spot too many. It's as many as needed plus one, and the plus one is Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And they know Alabama's in the title. Like, I think they've set this up very deliberately to fuck over the group of five and make sure that their brands are okay.
Well, and on top of that, too, you've got Notre Dame and Miami, who are separated by 3 spots in the AP poll. And what were they in the playoff last week? They were separated by 3 spots last week, too. In the poll, they have the same record, but Miami has the head-to-head win over Notre Dame. But you can't jump Miami over Alabama, because they don't want to play that game. And that's the other interesting part, even though we have seen it play out on the field.
Yeah, it's all very deliberate. And I think it was Heather Dinich was doing the CFP ranking special last week. Mm-hmm. She talked about Miami has the head-to-head win over Notre Dame, but they don't have this edge and strength of victory. And I'm like, what are we talking about at this point? Like, my takeaway from the whole
strength
Notre Dame thing.
Victory is what you go to when there's a cluster of teams.
Right. When you have two teams that have the same record and played each other, use the result.
And are, like, the rankings between them, the sandwich between them is not too meaty. Like, that's when you go to the head-to-head result.
It's just baffled me the whole way that, like, Miami, and I'm not even campaigning for Miami to be in. I don't think Miami's that good, but they beat Notre Dame. So explain to me how Notre Dame is 2 spots ahead of them. It's nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at Miami, too, like, sure, they may not be very good. I saw the stat the other day. They have won 5 games this year, I think, in the conference by 30-plus points.
Yeah.
And sure, is it a shitty conference? Yeah. But you still have gone out and done some of the work.
And Notre Dame basically plays an ACC schedule anyways.
Yeah.
So it's comparable strength of schedule. It's apparently not that comparable strength of victory, but frankly, I don't care, because it's 2 teams that are close and have the same record, and one has a head-to-head win.
Yep.
Explain how Miami isn't ranked ahead of Notre Dame. Oh, well, it's strength of victory. Then you know what? If I'm every Power 4 team in the country, I'm never putting Notre Dame on the schedule. And I salute USC for stopping it. I think Stanford stopped it too recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're not playing you anymore.
Yeah,
it does us no good to play you.
Yeah, you look at what Notre Dame. I mean, their losses this year are to Texas A&M and to Miami. If they were 10-2 and their losses were to, like, Louisville and I mean, I don't think they'd ever lose to some of these. You'd just be looking pretty much every year at 12-0 Notre Dame. But you live by the skin of your teeth every single week that way. Right. I mean, you are treated effectively at that point.
Like a G5 team.
A bigger brand G5 team.
Yep.
Like, you'll win every tiebreaker because of the logo, but everything else is you're living by the skin of your teeth every single week.
And honestly, that's probably the committee's wet dream, for lack of a better term, that they could treat Notre Dame like a group of five.
I don't know. I think they're clearly trying to push Notre Dame in. They're not treating them like a Group of Five team this year.
I'm really rooting for the Castaway. I just meant like because then they wouldn't have to respect other Group of Five teams if they could just say that Notre Dame's our G5. And then they don't have to respect anybody else.
Yeah.
They could just throw JMU in a dumpster like they want to.
Yeah.
I am still just rooting for BYU because I do believe Texas Tech would get in. So if BYU wins, then Notre Dame is forced out because there's just not enough bids. And that's where you start seeing, uh-oh, do you have to join a conference?
They'll never do it. Last year's playoff probably cemented them never doing it because you don't have to share any of the TV revenue.
And probably it's like winning your fantasy football league and you get the payout and you're like, great, now I can afford to be in this for the next 5 years and not win it. Notre Dame is like, oh, we got to the national title. Now we don't have to make the playoffs for another decade and we've already paid off all these seasons.
So for those unfamiliar, there's TV shares. It's not just in the college football playoff. It's the NCAA tournament as well. But when you win a game and move along, you get a cut of the TV revenue. But the way that it goes is it's conference shared. So when Bama wins a playoff game, they split all that money with the ever-growing SEC conference. Same thing in the Big Ten, the ever-growing Big Ten conference. You're sharing it with 16 to 18 schools. Notre Dame's not in a conference. So when they win, they keep the whole pot to themselves. And if they rack up playoff victories, and especially when you get to a national title like they did last year, you cash the fuck in on it.
All right. Did we miss anything in college before we get to the Shield?
Anything else you want to hit on the coaching hire front? I want your thought on Pat Fitzgerald because it's all signs are pointing to him being the next head coach at Michigan State.
Pretty much official. Whatever. Breaking news, Bob Chesney to UCLA, my guy. I would have loved Bob Chesney at Michigan State, for the record. I think it would have been a more inspired hire. I think Pat Fitzgerald's a little bland. It's like a name everybody expected. It's a known guy. I do have problems. His final 4 years at Northwestern were not good. He gets propped up a lot on like, oh, he always did more with less. And then you go look at some of the results and you're like, did he?
I would say this. Here's the one reason why, and I'm not saying that you guys hit a home run, but I think you hit a triple. He always had to deal with the academic stuff at Northwestern. That is a tough game to play.
I get it.
And at Michigan State, it's not nearly the academic behemoth that Northwestern is.
It should be an advantage, theoretically, that it's a Big Ten school that isn't an academic behemoth.
And I would say if you're going to pump money into a Pat Fitzgerald-led program, I think that you can compete.
The key is that the donors are behind him because they were never behind Jonathan Smith. And that's a big reason why it failed. If he's got donor support, then sure, I guess it's like I'm not going to say it's a bad hire. I think it's a fine hire.
I think if you have donor support, it's I won't say it's tough to fuck up a hire, but there aren't really necessarily bad hires.
I think he will at least get us out of the basement.
I don't know what the schedule is like next year. I think 9-3, if he can overhaul this thing in the portal relatively quickly, 9-3 is attainable.
I'm pretty hard pressed to say he's going to win a Big Ten. I'm hard pressed to say he's going to make a 12-team playoff. Like, I don't know. So I think it's kind of a bridge. It's like a stopgap. He'll get us out of this and back into relevance, and then we'll see what we do. Maybe he's a bridge coach. It's a lot of money to pay a bridge coach. And I question the results because, like, oh, he did more with less at Northwestern. Yeah, he was 9-25 in Big Ten play in his final four seasons. 9-25. He went 1-8 in the Big Ten in his final year at Northwestern. Jonathan Smith is capable of going 1-8 at Michigan State in Big Ten play. I just saw it. You know what I mean? So, like, it better be good. It just, like, we'll see. He says some of the right things that he's reflected a lot in the time off. Why did you have the time off? But he says a lot of the right things about it.
I will say, I think one thing that may be helping him out, too, is he has sons that are going through it. He understands what the NIL game and all that stuff is now because he's been on the parent side of it.
Well, it's 3 years ago he had the interviews where he's like, the NIL's terrible. He was basically saying, fuck the NIL. He's not in. But now he's doing interviews where he's saying, over the time that he's had off, he's gotten a PhD in modern football. And that he doesn't want to be a dinosaur. He doesn't want to do it the old school way. He wants to embrace the NIL. If all that's true, then great. Let's see what happens. I'm going to support him because I have no choice.
Probably part of the fuck the NIL conversation, too, is we weren't getting NIL at Northwestern. A, we play in a city that where if there's donors and sponsors, they're going to the pro teams.
Yeah.
And on top of that, too, like Northwestern, if you're seeing a big donation being made, it's probably to an academic building and not to the athletics program.
Yeah.
So he felt like NIL put him on a lower playing field.
My initial reaction was, this is terrible. And then I sat with it a little longer, and I'm like, it's not terrible. But I'm also not going to do what a lot of people are doing and glaze the hire and say it's like a home run or it's great. I saw somebody say it's the best hire of the cycle. No, it isn't. James Franklin would have been better. Not that we ever could have, but Lane Kiffin would have been better. I think Bob Chesney, now at UCLA, would have been better. So it's fine. It's not great. It's not as bad as what Arkansas did.
No.
Go get Ryan Silverfield, some fucking nobody from Memphis.
Fresh off an 8-4 season.
You have all the money in the world. All the money in the world. And you go get this bum from Memphis?
I got to find this tweet. Because this
Arkansas fans are pissed.
They're threatening to burn the stadium down.
Like Florida gets John Sumrall. That's a great hire. I think that's really good.
Yeah.
UCLA getting Bob Chesney, I think, is inspired. Ryan Silverfield? What are you, out of your fucking mind at Arkansas? Okay. Could you not scrounge pennies together?
This is the most Jerry put the call in for a little PR help here. Tom Pelissero, after Ryan Silverfield tweets out that he's the next head coach at Arkansas. Quote tweet, very cool. After a successful run at Memphis, former NFL assistant Ryan Silverfield is headed to the SEC as new head coach at Arkansas. That screams Jerry Jones looking for a little PR help.
Yep. What the? I mean, it's a baffling hire. I saw it come by yesterday, and I'm like, what? They did what?
Yeah.
So at least I didn't get that.
All right. Yeah, I mean, Michigan State didn't make the best hire of the cycle. They were far from the worst hire of the cycle. I'm going to guess when it's all said and done, you were probably in the top quarter.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll support it, and I hope it works out, and I hope that finally they just put money into this and take football a little seriously. That's all I can ask
for. Listen, sometimes the skeptical hire ends up being one of the better ones. I was skeptical of when Syracuse hired Fran Brown. I think a lot of people were skeptical of Kurt Cignetti.
D'Antonio was skeptical back in the day at Michigan State.
I'm sure people were skeptical of Dan Lanning, too.
Yeah, probably. All right, you ready to go to the NFL?
Let's do it.
So we already kind of covered the Thursday stuff in our picks pod. That was out on Friday. If you want to go back, take a listen to that. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Also on YouTube, youtube.com/@ESPN or @PickAsideESPN. We'll start with Friday, Bears-Eagles, and we're going to play my favorite game. Who did it say more about, the Bears or the Eagles?
I think it said a little more about the Bears because of the way that they move the Eagles' defense. And really that to me, like the Eagles' offense, we know kind of what the Eagles are. They are an ebb and flow team. They do go through some of these lulls. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they wake up from these lulls in January, and sometimes they get hit by a freight train in Tampa Bay. But we kind of knew this about the Eagles. We didn't know how the Bears would handle tougher competition. And to go out and dominate a game in what was the biggest point spread that you faced all season long, and dominate the game in the fashion that you did. Like, to be honest, they won by 9. I don't think the final score really reflected how much more dominant the Bears were in this game. Like, if we were to play the box score game, this probably looks more like a 14-21 point victory for the Bears. Now, there's moments where you need to capitalize an extra time or two if you're Chicago, if you want to continue to show that you're this team that is caliber of being the number one team in the NFC right now, which is crazy to even think of.
It's insane.
But on top of that, too, like, you moved an Eagles defense that has game wreckers. Jalen Carter's a game wrecker. He had the sack, but that's about all he did in this game. Mm-hmm. Jordan Davis can be a game wrecker. Those linebackers that they have, guys like Zach Bond, we saw how much they impacted games last year. Those defensive backs were kind of nothing in this game, too. So you moved the defending champions defensively, and I think that screams a lot about the identity that you have, where we are a physical football team and we're going to come into your house and punch you in the face.
Yep.
And I think that's a big question, because to me, I wanted to know, what's this team going to look like against a good defensive line? Because I feel like you haven't really had a lot of those. You got Cincinnati without Trey Hendrickson. You've faced a couple teams that are missing guys on the defensive line, or they're just not very good defensive lines to begin with. Mm-hmm. Now I have an answer of what you can look like against a good defensive line, and it makes me feel a little bit better of, okay, if you faced L.A., maybe you would have a shot in the game. If you faced, you have the Packers twice now. When you're going up against Green Bay, I have a little bit of faith that you can beat the Packers.
Yep.
Because of this.
I think it said a lot about the Eagles, but I think you have to be an unreal hater to say that it said more about the Eagles than it said about the Bears. And it's the way that it happened. Like I told you on Friday, maybe it was earlier in the week, mm-hmm. there was a world where I felt like there was very little possibility I'd watch this game and it would be a Bears win, and I would think it said more about the Bears than the Eagles. This was apparently the way, mm-hmm. because it was bully ball. And it was so hyper-physical.
Yeah.
And running for damn near 300 yards, you just don't do it. Having two backs go for 100 yards, you don't do it. I thought it was wildly impressive. Eagles' side of things, they're cooked. I think they're cooked product, man. Maybe that's an overreaction, but you tell me that I'm not reading into it too much. Some of the body language, some of the facial expressions from Jalen Hurts towards A.J. Brown on a drop pass or towards Devontae Smith – they just look like they hate each other.
Yeah.
All of them. And the offensive line has regressed really badly. They can't run the ball. They've struggled to stop the run all year. They really got popped when it was the Bears. I just feel like that Eagles, Lions, Bills all occupy the same airspace to me. They are regressed teams that just aren't right. And you almost can't figure out what it is, but it's not right.
I will say this, though, about the Eagles. I don't know if they loved each other last year, and they still went out and won a Super Bowl.
But
I get there was better personnel, there was better assistant coaching in place, and this is probably just going to look a little bit more like, what was it, the team, whatever the team was that went out and lost to the Bucs in the first round, so 2 years ago. Yeah, 2023. This is probably that team just reincarnated, but it doesn't mean they're not going to get to the Super Bowl next year.
Well, that's fine. Yeah,
the window I still think is very open.
Only talking for 2025 because I think this is the kind of team that, like, once they get hit in the mouth, the difference between this year and last year is last year they never got hit.
Yeah.
Nobody punched them in the mouth. Nobody made them bleed. This year, people are making them bleed. And once they start to, I think they just give up. Mm-hmm. I think they are soft. They have no ability to go through the adversity. Once the adversity hits them, they're done.
I still think, though, they win the division. If you look at their remaining schedule, they have what, like the 30th toughest schedule? It's like one of the softest schedules the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys having that tie, I think, actually hurts the Cowboys more than it helps them. I think it helps them in some other regards. I don't think it helps them in terms of making the division.
Jesus, yeah. Chargers, Raiders, Commanders, Bills, Commanders.
Yeah. Like,
I would like to
take care of business the rest of the way and win the division. I get that there's a lot of Cowboys steam. I think the steam is more towards them finding their way into the playoffs as opposed to winning the division. I just think the division is going to be too tough because the final like five games for both of these teams are super easy.
Yep.
But when you have what do the Eagles still have? Like a 2.5 game lead on them?
Yeah.
It's tough to choke away a 2.5 game lead with five to go when you have the schedule that the Eagles have.
Okay, who did it say more about? Colts and Texans.
The Texans, baby.
I agree.
Like, so I went out, I placed the Texans to win the AFC.
I did too.
Because this defense is just too good.
It's
the defense
insane.
Is going to keep them in every single game. I think even though the quarterback play is up and down all season long, I think if you at least have a baseline of what CJ Stroud is, and frankly, I love what the receiver group has become with what you're seeing emerge with Jaden Higgins, what we know Nico Collins is, who's the Xavier Hutchinson, feels like he makes a sizable play from time to time.
Woody Marks has been great,
and when it's not Woody Marks, Nick Chubb had a really nice touchdown run yesterday. Dalton Schultz is just a steady tight end, too. You know what you're getting out of Dalton Schultz. He's not going to give you a 100-yard game, but he's a red zone threat for you. I just think they're a well-rounded team right now. And when you've got the defense moving the way that it is right now, you can beat anybody, mm-hmm. and you might be the most dangerous team in the AFC.
I think they're the 2015 Broncos. You can be offensively challenged when you have a defense like that because every game is a race
and
to 20.
This offense is better than that 2015 Bronco offense, too.
I agree. Yeah, that offense was horrible because mm-hmm. Peyton Manning was screws in his neck. But this defense for the Texans, it's a race to 20 against anybody they play. Big stage against the Chiefs. If they win it, they'll fire the silver bullet through Kansas City and end their season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to win the AFC South. I don't buy this Duval stuff. I don't buy that. Jacksonville is in first place now. Like the Colts side of this is you have blown it.
Mm-hmm.
You had a massive division lead. You started the year 7-1. Everything was going great for you. Now you got to worry about making the playoffs at all because they are the only team in the wild card currently that does not own a tiebreaker against Kansas City.
It's interesting too because, like the Colts, they still have five to play. They're at 8 wins right now. You're effectively guaranteed an above 500 season.
Yep.
But this is one of those teams where like you readjust your expectations as the season goes along. If you told any Colts fan at the beginning of the year, hey, we're going to start Daniel Jones, and we're also going to win 9 games, they'd be like, sign me the fuck up for that.
But if you told them that they start 7-1 with the best offense in league history?
Yeah, that's where it's tough. That's where it's really tough. And you look at their schedule, the rest, maybe they're not guaranteed to win 9 games.
Dude, I'm telling you.
I think they still do, but... Because some of the home games that you have, but you get two with the Jaguars, I think you at least split that.
It's also that their quarterback has a fucking broken leg.
I feel like that's not being... It's being chalked up to, oh, he's fine. He ain't fine. Especially when you've got Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson in your lap for 60 minutes,
yeah,
too.
Like, have fun with Josh Hines-Allen on the road next week.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
You have a broken fucking leg.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I don't know. The last one I want to ask you about, actually two more I want to ask you about in terms of who it says more about.
Mm-hmm.
Rams-Panthers is the first.
Okay.
I think it says more about the Panthers.
I 100% agree.
Because I still think the Rams are the best team in football. Mm-hmm. I think it's a weird spot. You go West Coast to East Coast. The weather's terrible. Stafford hasn't turned the ball over mm-hmm. at all year. One game, he blew up.
Yeah.
But I think the Panthers are kind of similar. Not as lofty, but similar in how we talk about them to the Bears, in that they've never been given any respect.
Mm-hmm.
The way they win has always been talked about and denigrated. But they sit here, win total cleared. They're 7-6 now.
Mm-hmm.
They're beating good teams. They have an outside shot still to win their division.
I wouldn't even call it an outside shot. They have a legitimate chance to win their division.
Like, it just...
You
at
still
some point,
have two games with the Bucs. You control your destiny.
At some point, Carolina's going to force people to respect them. And well, I think that we hit that with this game.
You know what? There's, if you look at the bye weeks this week, it's very interesting because I think it's two teams that really need a bye week.
Yeah, Niners and
the Panthers. And them getting their bye week at this stage in the season versus some teams that got it in weeks 5, 6, and 7... You may see a rejuvenated Panther team down the stretch. And to pick off this win here, it's impressive, man. Like, it is maybe the most impressive win of the year.
I think so.
Like, that's what the Panthers went out and did.
Look, part of it is Stafford blew up.
Yeah, and on that front of it, and you even said this, too, when we were previewing the games. Like, listen, the range of outcomes from this game are wide. We could see the Panthers go out and win, and I don't think it really would surprise us. It wouldn't be what you or I would have picked.
No.
But it would not
I think that was my exact words. I'm not betting Panthers plus 10, but it wouldn't shock me on Monday if they won the game.
Yes, it's exactly what you said, and I remember that like while that game was happening. And when I look at this with what the Stafford performance was, listen, he still had some really nice plays to Devontae Adams. But the other part of it, too, is, listen, Paul Skeens gets shelled a couple times a year, too.
Right.
Tarek Skubal gets shelled once or twice a year, too.
Right.
This was that game. Matt Stafford is still the MVP, should be the MVP front runner, and is still playing MVP caliber football. Well, he had one game where he got shelled.
That's
it
where
happens.
I keep seeing people reacting and writing up pieces. Did Stafford's MVP chances go up in smoke? I'm like, no.
I haven't looked at the odds this morning. if he's no longer the favorite, it's I think you're buy. Finding value in it.
Yeah, like it's a good time to buy Matthew Stafford's MVP odds. All right, last one I want to ask you about, Bills Steelers. I think it said more about the Steelers. I think the Bills still have problems. The Steelers, Rodgers stinks. It's time to go, man.
I don't think it said anything about anyone.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't. Like,
I guess we already knew it about
knew
the Steelers.
That about the Steelers, right?
But I don't know if we knew it to the extent of if Aaron Rodgers is that bad. Like it's time to go.
I'll say this, maybe not from the Aaron Rodgers front, but the fed upness from the Steelers fans, where you're booing Renegade, where you're chanting fire Tomlin.
Yeah, he's done.
That it maybe said more big picture about the Steelers as opposed to the singular season.
They're just and I don't blame Steelers fans for it. They're done with
no.
It. It's been 15 years of this.
Sometimes you need the split. The split just needs to happen.
I think it's the best thing for both sides. Mm-hmm. Honestly, Buffalo might be in the same boat. It's like a perfect looking into the mirror where if you don't get it done this year, I think it's the best thing for both Sean McDermott and the Bills to go a different direction.
If you're Buffalo, would you hire Mike Tomlin?
Probably. If you're Pittsburgh, would you hire Sean McDermott?
I don't know if I would.
I wouldn't because I'm trying to get a quarterback and be like modern.
I think if I'm Buffalo, I hire Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, because I know I can get my now. You're gonna if you hire Mike Tomlin, you're probably gonna pair Josh Allen with an idiot offensive coordinator because there's nothing Tomlin likes more than hiring some bum to call plays. But I did think it spoke a little bit more about honestly the way Buffalo woke up after halftime too and just pounded the rock for a full half.
Yeah.
Maybe they're waking up a little bit, but I have to see it to believe it. The rest of this slate, there wasn't a ton to draw from for me.
Except, doesn't mean it wasn't fun.
Yeah, the Broncos-Commanders game was very fun.
Yeah. Shout out to Dan Quinn. I know it didn't work, but going for two at the end, right call.
If you like watching snuff films, Seattle and Minnesota was fun in the sense that Max Brosmer's career, grand opening, grand closing, that guy's never taking a snap again.
Yeah.
His pick six is probably the worst play that I have ever seen in my entire life watching football.
Yeah.
And it was only one of four interceptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that everything about that game was just everything about that from the Minnesota side. And to be honest, I thought their defense really showed up in this game. But the problem was that your quarterback put you in such a hole.
Yep.
That they're like, what? It was scoreless after the first quarter, wasn't it?
Yep.
Your defense or your offense, your quarterback put you in such a hole, and then you have Justin Jefferson no show in the media after the game too.
Oh, he's like, pissed.
I don't think he's at an AJ Brown level because I've always thought like Justin Jefferson is the consummate teammate.
No,
but at a certain point, you hit your level.
Here's the problem for Minnesota. Minnesota's just gonna have to go get a quarterback, and they're going to pay Mac Jones. I think everybody knows already the team that gets Mac Jones is Minnesota. That's it's a match made in heaven. Yeah. And he'll probably be pretty good for them. They're going to eject on J.J. McCarthy. Obviously, Max Brosmer's a fucking nothing.
Yeah.
But like J.J. McCarthy was terrible. And the reality is they have a Super Bowl caliber roster with some of the best skill players in the game, a good offensive line, a great defense. They can't waste any of this, so go pay Mac Jones.
You know, this might be a perfect season or like off season for the Vikings because I think you could do two things here. You can go out and pay Mac Jones, and I think that would be the right call to make. You can also, in the third or fourth round, draft a quarterback. Mm-hmm. One of these guys who we thought was going in the first round, go draft a Nuss. Go draft a Cade Klubnik. Go draft a Drew Aller. It didn't work out their senior seasons in college. But that doesn't mean there's, A, no pedigree with them, because that's not true.
Let Kevin O'Connell teach them.
Yeah, let them teach them and do, like, one of these guys can maybe be the Dak Prescott for your team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, or the Russell Wilson for your team. One of these guys can be that, the classic old-school developmental quarterback learning under an offensive mastermind, and you could set yourself up for long-term success that way. This may end up being the perfect offseason for the Vikings.
If the Vikings take advantage of it, too, I have to tell you, the NFC North next year might be one of the best divisions in the history of football.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, like,
pick the team that finishes sub 500 next year. Like, it's tough to do.
I have a feeling, I know you might feel differently. I have to imagine the Lions bounce back. I still kind of think this is their 2023 Eagles reality check year. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, you can't just love your own people. and Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell by force are going to have to go replace some pieces on their offensive line and add an edge rusher. Like, they'll now understand, oh, we do have to do this. They'll bounce back. The Packers are going to be good. The Bears, I think, are going to potentially be great in 2026 and 2027. And the Vikings, if they go pay a quarterback like Mac Jones, their roster's ready built.
It could just be the war of NFL attrition. Whoever can be the healthiest is going to be the ones that are above 500 in that division.
You'll be the AFC North, except good, where everybody is hovering right around a 9-10 win season, but it's because you're all demons.
Yeah. It's the 9 or 10 win team no one wants to see in the playoffs.
Right. What else you got in the NFL? It was kind of a slow week for big. Can I just say, everybody involved with the Atlanta Falcons, just get the fuck out of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yes.
Just go away forever.
Yeah.
And they have to trade Bijan. They have to trade Drake London. Try to get anything you can for Kyle Pitts. Just everything has to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything.
No, I mean, that entire operation there, it's been broken for years. I think if you pull the plug on Raheem Morris, he's just whatever. He's not an NFL head coach. He's a hell of a DC. He's going to follow the Robert Saleh, Vic Fangio, Dennis Allen trajectory. Hell of a DC, just not cut out to be a head coach. Yep.
For people who don't understand how bad this is, Atlanta is going to finish the season in top 10 pick territory. They don't have their pick.
And guess who does?
The Rams. It's always the Rams.
Les Snead, notorious for fuck them picks, all of a sudden has a first round pick in a year where they might win the Super Bowl.
It's just like
they're the Super Bowl favorites, and they might have a top 10 pick out of it. Go fuck
everybody involved in the Falcons. Go away forever.
Can I send you this this little flare? The Dolphins are 5-7 right now.
I know. Worst team in football.
Sneaky have crept to 5-7 here. And gettable in pretty much every game the rest of the way.
I know.
Could this team find their way to 9-8 and Mike McDaniel, who was supposedly fired week 3, sticks around? Like 9-8, you're not firing Mike McDaniel. Even if you miss the playoffs at 9-8. But, like, you've got the Jets this week, on the road, albeit, but you have the Jets this week.
Boy, are they.
Certainly win that.
They are on a treadmill of suck. If they get to 9-8 and keep McDaniel, what Dolphins fan is going to be happy? You're stuck with Mike McDaniel and Tua in perpetuity. You've basically become AFC East Steelers. You don't have a quarterback. You don't have a coach. You can't win anything, but you're stuck with all these guys.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a chance in all of these games. It goes Jets, Steelers, Bengals, Bucks, Patriots.
Imagine like the Colts collapse, the Chiefs don't really get off the mat, and we end up with a 10-7 Dolphins team in the playoffs just to get loaded into a cannon and launched out of Denver.
Or New England. But if you're 10-7, you'll be coming off of a win at New England, and you're just running it back the next week.
That would be incredible. It would. I kind of feel. Who do you think? Okay, here's a last question. We'll end on this.
Okay.
We'll split it up. We'll do it two ways.
Okay.
NFC. Who gets the one seed?
I still think it's the Rams.
I do too.
Although,
I will tell you who's really interesting though. If you think things go sideways for the Bears at all in the next 3 weeks, Packers are in play for the one seed. Extremely in play. Seattle
is the one everyone forgets about. Seattle, they have the same record as the Rams. They don't have the tiebreaker. They still have another game head to head the rest of the way. So yeah, I mean, like, if you gave me the cluster of Bears, Rams, Eagles, Packers, and the Seahawks, I'd probably power rank the Bears last or second to last.
I agree with you.
I definitely put the Rams, Tampa, and Seattle ahead of them.
Like, if we just power rank the playoff teams in the NFC right now, I think I'd put Tampa firmly behind the Bears, and I'd probably put San Francisco behind the Bears.
In terms of being the one seed or just as a whole?
Just as a whole, if we're power ranking current NFC playoff teams. Tampa and San Francisco both. And you just beat Philly, so I'll go ahead and put Philly behind you. Everyone else I'd still have in front of you. Packers, Rams, Seahawks.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think people are sleeping on the Niners a little bit of what they are. Like, going on the road and beating, I get it was Shadur on one side, but we still know what's on the other side of that Browns defense. And I get Malik Collins now done for the season, but that's still a tall task with an aging offensive line of And I know Myles Garrett got home, what, he had one sack in this game, but
they're legitimate. It's just their defense is so injured, banged up. I can't imagine.
But like, what offense is like head and shoulders is good, just going to pump San Francisco?
I think the Bears are built to do it better than anyone else because they'll just line up and bully you.
I think the Rams, definitely. I kind of think Seattle might be too. My thing with the Bears is, yeah, you've run the ball with tremendous success, but sometimes the point totals don't look as big or as nice as they should.
I agree with that.
Because there's certain moments in these games where it feels like they have a chance to put a team away, run it down their throats, and they either come away with three or they come away with zero. It's like some of these games, you could put them away.
It's too often, I think, the problem, and it will haunt them in a playoff game if it's not fixed. And not that it needs to be fixed, but it just, I don't love it. Way too often do they get to second down and like second and four, and they'll throw a pass, and then it's incomplete or it only goes for a couple yards, and they're third and two, and they're throwing again. And it's just like you have the best ground attack in football. Mm-hmm.
Well,
just
I think
pound it.
There was one that really bothered you and I. It was the red zone where they went out and it was...
Oh, going pass.
Yeah.
They got a first down, set up a red zone drive, low red zone. You go pass.
It may have been goal to go or it was like you needed to get to the one or two for a first down. Yeah.
The other one that bugged me was first down. You get 7 yards. It's second and three. You go pass on second down, get nothing. And then you go screen on third and three and Caleb throws a pick. And I'm like, what? Just run the ball.
Yeah.
You're killing them on the ground. Yeah. Just run it.
There's no reason to try to reinvent the wheel sometimes.
The last thing, AFC. Who gets the one seed, Denver or New England?
Whew, let me look at their remaining schedules here.
New England's is very easy. I can save you the time.
So let me. But Denver's...
Bills, Ravens, Jets, Dolphins.
Denver, I think, has one...
Holy mercy, is Denver's schedule actually a lot more difficult than I thought? Wow.
I don't think it's difficult, but it's not easy. You play the Packers, but you at least get that game at home. You're going on the road to against the Chiefs short week.
That's a desperate Chiefs team.
That'll be a desperate Chiefs team.
Chargers at home could be for the division, depending on what the Chargers do the next few weeks. But I kind of think they're cooked.
Yeah, especially who knows how much time Herbert's going to miss. And even if he doesn't miss it, like we see what it does. It just looks clunky and awkward where – we're going to see the same thing that we saw with the Steelers, where you may have to run games out of pistol, and good luck running toss plays out of pistol. It just looks clunky, it looks broken, and the success. There's a reason they don't do it.
People hate Jim Harbaugh now in L.A. Have you seen that?
Do they really?
Chargers fans?
All three of them?
They've turned on Jim. Yeah, all three Chargers fans have turned on Jim Harbaugh.
Did you know what it is? The one lady who shows up on the Monday night games?
Oh, yeah.
Did he lose her?
She's
the Chargers
plant.
Fan?
No, he'll never lose her. She's not real. What it is, it's so funny to me, and this gives you pride as a Bears fan and should give the city pride. Every time I see a graphic now, it's the team that interviewed Ben Johnson and didn't hire them, and their fans going, and I'm stuck with this idiot. And then I just click on whatever team it is, and it's like the Falcons got Raheem Morris, the Chargers got Jim Harbaugh, the Commanders got Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just seeing Ben Johnson interviewed with us, and they're like, fuck.
Yeah, it feels good. It definitely feels good. Or it's like, I saw this one. It's like, it was a Giants fan account of, could we be next year's Bears?
We're back, dude. The Bears are back.
Could we be next year's Bears?
It used to be us. Could we be next year's Commanders?
Yeah.
Now they're looking for to be us. It's incredible.
But to answer your question, I think the Patriots end up with it.
I do too. I just, they've done so much of the work already, and their schedule ends so easily. It's insane to think that Mike Vrabel and Ben Johnson could both be the one seeds. That's insane.
Who gets Coach of the Year?
I think Ben Johnson, because it's more impressive winning the NFC North than it is winning the AFC East.
But when you're winning the conference and getting a bye week, if you're New England, you had to outlast Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City. I'll even throw Houston in there too. Like, you had to outlast some damn good teams. I get your strength of schedule was
the problem is you didn't play any of those teams, and a lot of them shot themselves in the head.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you will have...
Buffalo's the only one you'll have really beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And you lost to the Steelers.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it would be Ben Johnson. But I don't know. I still don't think the Bears are going to be the one seed. I don't think the Bears are going to win the North, so it's tough.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess if the Bears are the one seed, it will have meant that you have beaten two of three, or really three of four down the stretch of Philly, Green Bay twice, and San Francisco.
Yeah, and Detroit at the end.
Probably. Yeah, so probably four or five of those.
It would be so legitimate, I think you would take it.
Those would be four of the five best wins on New England's schedule.
Yeah.
So.
All right, that'll do it for us on a recap edition of Pick a Side. We'll be back on Thursday with the College Conference Championship picks and Friday with the NFL for Week 14 as we wrap things up entering December. This is the Pick a Side podcast.